Animals Ball, the podcast where we talk about horror and genre films in a positive and constructive manner. I'm Samuel Newman, and with me as always is Nathaniel Johnson. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing well. I'm doing,
doing
well.
Well?
Yeah.
It's good. I'm doing all right myself.
Good.
We lost our dog for a couple hours last night, but we got her back. So,
Oh, okay.
yeah, she got out of the backyard and ran down the street to the park, and we couldn't find her. And luckily some kids found her. And this was like 3 in the morning, of course.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When I say some kids, I mean some like 20-year-olds, you know.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm an old man.
No, I was actually talking to my mother today about that and about like the new job and about how, like, you know, redefining young people. But when I said young people, she's like, what are they, like, you know, teenagers? I'm like, oh no, I meant like 30. Like,
right.
You know, like, it's like now I'm like, young people are, it's like it goes right up through now to like 27. Like,
yeah.
I mean, things are different now than even when they were when I was 27. Like, I'm like, oh shit. Like, but yeah.
So yeah. That's fun. Yeah. But anyways, we're here because it's May the 4th. And of course, that's Star Wars Day. So may the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're jumping on to episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Right. Yep. We did Phantom Menace last year.
Right.
And
so now we're into the second of this trilogy.
Yeah. Which you can't complain about, because I offered, you're like, we can do one of the good ones. And you were like, no, let's stay with chronological order. And I'm like, all right. But
yeah, this is my fault.
Yeah. But and I was like, we could easily do Empire, man. We can do Empire. That's a good one.
But the kids, you know, they like this stuff. So
no, actually, that's one of the points I'm going to make when we're having a conversation is that, yeah, like, I actually, when working at the movie theater, you know, they announced the Phantom Menace was coming back.
Right.
To theaters, and some of them were like, you know, oh, they love the prequels. They were like excited for it. And I'm like, okay. And
Star Wars, and you know,
one of them even said their favorite is Attack of the Clones.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, really? Like, that's your favorite one? And yeah, that's my favorite one. And I'm like, well, I guess you were the right age. And that's what they ended up saying, was like, you know, well, yeah, that movie came out like when I was 9.
Right.
And, you know, so they, you know, it was a childhood thing,
right,
for us. What is this movie? This is 2001, 2002.
2002, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm already 20.
Right.
And you're mid 20s.
25. Yeah.
Yeah. 25. So, yeah, this movie's not made for us.
No. Nope.
It wasn't when it came out. So yeah, should I do? Did you? I know we just recorded this a couple nights ago, but did you have you checked out anything else or anything else you wanted that you watched that you wanted to mention?
No, I just watched a couple episodes of Babylon 5 last night before I lost my dog. So.
Oh right, yeah, yeah.
Then that's what I spent most of the night doing. Was
that's what I always forget. That's what you've been working. You're actually working on a long show,
right?
For while you're kind of doing other stuff. I'm I just started last night. I restarted the old X-Men cartoon.
Nice.
And I'm gonna watch X-Men 97 after that, because I realized, I was like, I could watch X-Men 97 and I'm sure it would be fine to just jump right into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, you know, this is supposed to be a continuation of a show that went for 4 seasons, so I'm like,
right,
maybe I should watch it again. Because I honestly have very little memory of it past the first season. And so I'm like, obviously it's quick. So yesterday I got through the first couple episodes of season 2.
Right.
But the show's a blast. It's so much fun to watch.
I love that show back in the day. I haven't watched it since, but
it still holds up. There's things about it that are really silly and dated. Mm-hmm. And clearly, like, this is a show made for kids occasionally. Right. But what it does is have some really great character moments. Wolverine in particular is written very well. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of fun to it. Rogue's written really well too. And everybody else is sort of like, everything Gambit says is basically something about cards. It's kind of extraordinary in that sense. And it's fun to riff too, because I'm watching it and I'm riffing some of the dialogue, because, like, you know, Professor X, like, Cyclops gets into an argument with Gambit, and then Professor X is basically siding with Gambit. And like, and so I'm like, you know,
there's nobody just, like that.
Yeah. And like, you know, that's what basically the joke. And like, the professor is like, now I must go to my office. And I'm like, yeah, to think of more ways to belittle you, Scott. Like, you know, but yeah, it's, but no, it's a lot of fun and I do recommend it. My one celebratory splurge was that I was like, I'll put, Disney Plus back and I'll, do X-Men because it's supposedly good.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
X-Men, yeah, X-Men 97 is supposed to be really good, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, so
yeah, Phantom Menace. No, not Phantom Menace.
No, we did that one. Yeah, Attack of the Clones. Okay, let me do the vitals here. So, as we mentioned, Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, was came out in 2002, written and directed by George Lucas, along with screenwriter Jonathan Hales. Primary cast of Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman, Hayden Christensen, Christopher Lee, Samuel L. Jackson, Ian McDiarmid, Tamira Morrison, Jimmy Smits, and then Pernilla August. Returning as Shmi Skywalker. We have the voice talents of Frank Oz and Ahmed Best. And then we have some pre-fame bits from Rose Byrne and Joel Edgerton, who are both pretty big names now. And then, of course, we do have Kenny Baker and Anthony Daniels returning as R2-D2 and C-3PO. And then, obviously the real star of the show, I think in the terms of this film is John Williams doing always doing a bang up job with score. And then of course a whole mess of Industrial Light and Magic people, who are doing a lot of heavy lifting, but also dropping the ball, which we'll get to. So positive and constructive.
Mm-hmm.
As best we can. Tell me something good about Star Wars Episode II, not the Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones.
Right. I don't know why I keep going back to the Phantom Menace, but I don't know. I like it expands the universe, you know, and the problem with Star Wars is it's always felt small, like, you know, like everybody knows everybody, and, you know,
sure.
There's like, you know, six worlds that we keep going back to, like, you know, Tatooine has in every freaking movie, and this is in this one too, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's a large stretch of Tatooine on this movie. Yeah
And but I feel like in a lot of ways this one like expanded, you know, like the scope of the universe, and, you know, just kind of like, oh, there is other stuff there, you know, when they have this whole civil war starting, and, you know, they show the Senate again, and, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
I like
stuff.
Okay. Yeah, but I don't know. The expansion seems dumb, but
right, yeah.
I mean, we don't really get anywhere. Right. But yeah, I mean, I think that you're right. I mean, one of my things I think I want to talk about with this movie in particular is that the film really doesn't know how to expand. It should be smaller, in my opinion. But it's kind of funny, I think, that the two main trilogies, the original trilogy and then the prequel trilogy, kind of are swapped in how they probably should be handled. Like, the prequel trilogy really should be focused on Anakin Skywalker's journey, you know, his arc. And then the sequel trilogy, the original trilogy, is sort of like the big intergalactic civil war storyline and a rebellion. And that never really got an expansion until Rogue One, which was the only Star Wars movie to actually show a war being fought, really. In terms of what we understand a war to actually be, not like spaceship battles, but like, you know, terrorism, you know, like blowing things up, insurgencies, you know, all that stuff is Rogue One. And so it's odd that the prequel trilogy kind of goes in that direction to be like, we're going to try to tell a bigger story, where I'm like, but your story is about the rise, it's supposed to be about the rise and fall of the greatest of them all.
Right.
And yet we've got so much other shit going on. I'm like, this movie, it just spirals out of control. You mentioned, feeling like it gets longer every time you watch it.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's so long, the reason why it feels that way is because there's way too much plot.
Right.
And that plot makes no sense, but it just keeps going. I still don't exactly know what the plot is. Mm-hmm. Other than, I mean, I guess what boils down to, they're trying to kill Padme. The Jedi get involved. Right. Inadvertently, it turns out the same guy who's trying to kill Padme is also building a clone army, but somehow that clone army ends up with the Republic, which I still don't exactly know what happened there. You know, and lots of scenes of like Yoda and Samuel L. Jackson looking concerned, but we don't really know why. You know, and then there's a lot of talking, but yet that talking doesn't get anywhere. They just keep talking. But in reality, this movie's core point is supposed to be Anakin Skywalker is starting to question his role within the Jedi and is starting to chafe under their rules.
Right.
And, you know, he wants to get it on with the girl he met when he was 8, and she was 30. weird. But yeah, it's strange to me that there's all this other stuff of like Jango Fett and you know, there's not that much actually happening in this movie, and yet it's so long.
Right. Yeah. That's...
Yeah. All right. Anyway,
I'm
sorry.
I said, but something good about this.
I'm supposed to say something good. Yes.
Right.
I think there are some cool. I think there are some okay sequences. I do think that. Even though it's you know just one big cartoon, I do think like the Obi-Wan Jango Fett battle's okay. I do think the Yoda Count Dooku fight's okay. I do think I think there's something there as far as like the actual like cool stuff. I think that stuff still works. I think it's still cool. But it is hard to sit and watch this movie and not zone out, which is probably why I still don't know what happens in it. I just literally just watched it and I still don't exactly know what the plot of this movie is, or what it means, but my favorite thing about it is forgetting Rose Byrne's in it until I watch it. And then I'm like, that's right. Rose Byrne just kind of walks around looking concerned and has a couple lines. Okay. And then goes away. And she doesn't have any, doesn't seem to have any clue what's happening in the scene. She's just told by the director, look sad. yeah. You know, there are a few scenes like that. I feel like that there are actors who literally don't know what they're doing. They're just, because they don't have a set. None of this is on a set.
Lucas isn't exactly an actor's director.
No. But I mean, I noticed it was right off the bat early on. It's like there's a scene in which Samuel Jackson basically just kind of puts his hand over his mouth, and you can see George Lucas just off there going, and now you're concerned.
Right.
Show me concerned. And Samuel's like, what am I concerned about, motherfucker? And he's like,
right.
he's like, no, you're concerned. But he seems to have no idea what the scene's actually about. Rose Byrne doesn't seem to ever know what the scene is actually about. She's just giving an emotion. That's my favorite thing about it is Rose Byrne. I'm like, you know, I always forget she's in it,
right.
And then I get excited because I love Rose Byrne. But Rose Byrne, of course, being the one of the stars of the Insidious franchise, 28 weeks later, quite a few things. She's kind of a big deal, but I just love that she's sort of here for no reason. and nobody knew who she was. She was just some, I think she might be Australian. I can't remember though. But yeah, so I mean, I guess that's my positive thing is that I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. there are, I mean, most of it's, you know, silly, but there are things I kind of enjoy. I feel like I feel like every time I watch any of the prequel films, I keep seeing the movie it could have been.
Right.
And I like that movie. But there's so many poor choices made story wise that it can't quite find where it needs to go. And it's weird to me that so many like Star Wars geeks are still like so connected to Lucas, because I'm like, how do you not doubt him after watching these movies? But like, I guess it wasn't woke. I don't know.
yeah.
But
this one doesn't have leftist undertone either, you know. So it's,
right. Know. Right. Yeah, the concern about you know, political unrest and you know,
fascism and, you know,
bioweaponry. Yeah, because right. Clones technically would technically qualify as a genetic weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bioweapon. But yeah, I don't know. It's yeah, I mean, Star Wars. Right. Yeah, like it's
that's why I wish, you know, I said this last time, I wish, you know, one of us would have, like, you know, been of that generation so we can, you know, like, so at least we could get the perspective of somebody who's, you know, grew up with the series,
yeah,
with the prequel series, and you know, really loved it, and they could speak to why they love it. But you know, this one, I mean, it's got some good fights in it, like you said, the Jango Fett battle on whatever that water planet was.
I was gonna say, if you knew the name of it, I would be really surprised.
Nemoidia, no, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
insert goofy Lucas name here.
Exactly. It's pretty cool. The car chase at the beginning, although it goes on too long, and that's one of the weaknesses of this trilogy, is that, you know, it's always overindulgent in how long these fight and chase sequences go. But I think it starts off pretty good and, you know, pretty tight. The battle in space between Jango Fett and Obi-Wan Kenobi is pretty cool, with the seismic bombs and everything. You know, just, it's a fun effect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got some action, you know. It's,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're right, though. I mean, all of it goes on too long.
Right.
And that's, I think that's quite possibly the most baffling thing about the prequel trilogy, is it's clear that the reason for that indulgence is because they are very impressed by this technology.
Right.
And like, the people making this movie are very, very into the level of technology they have access to. And even though I don't think anybody really likes that technology. Like, it's, maybe people do, I don't know. But I mean, I can't help but notice that, you know, even in today's conversation, like, the new Alien movie is, you know, allegedly all practical.
Right.
And everybody's like, yay, practical. It's so strange to me that, like, for some reason, Star Wars seems to be, at least its fan base, it seems to be immune to that criticism.
Right.
Like, it's actually, it's a bit in Urban Legend Final Cut, which, by the way, is actually a lot of fun, as a dumb post-Scream metafiction slasher. But they have a conversation which they are talking about making about effects, and Joey Lawrence's character says, I can, you know, make a phone call and we can do digital. And the two geeks are like, that do effects work, are going like, you know, fuck, you know, digital, no way. And he's like, that's lame. And he was like, oh, no, that's not what your god George Lucas says. And they're like, well, fuck George Lucas. And then the other guy goes, And they just go, you're going to hell, man. And they're like, yeah, right. I know. But no, it is like it's, you know, even now in 2024, when digital effects are even more, technically even more impressive than they were. And it, maybe this is part of the problem is that it wasn't as anywhere near as impressive as they thought it was. But we have that conversation about effects work where we're like, there's too much of X, Y, Z. Everybody wants more practical. We've made the joke many times about the, you know, story about Ian McKellen on the set of The Hobbit, you know, weeping and being like, what have I become? Because he's talking to tennis balls with actors' faces on them in front of a green screen instead of actually performing, which is George Lucas's fault. Like these are the movies that started that of being like, we're just going to shoot the whole thing in front of a green screen. And by the way, HD is not a friend to these films, by the way.
No.
The
CGI really suffers for being in high def all of a sudden.
The backgrounds are too artificial looking in high def. I swear I was watching it tonight and being like, oh my God, you can more than ever now you can tell that this is green screen. They're just projecting things in front of a green screen.
And then they shot on digital too, so it's like it doesn't have the grain of, you know, film. You know, it doesn't have that that bit that, you know, makes it feel more realistic when you're watching it.
Yeah,
you know, which they went back to doing film for the sequel trilogies, I believe. You know, but it's difficult because everything looks like a cartoon in this, and it's
all the backgrounds are way too artificial.
ILM's, you know, the best in the business. I mean, you know, like them and Weta Workshop, like, you know, the ostensibly, you know, the two big hitters in this, and you know, this one just looks kind of bad overall.
I agree. Yeah. And I don't remember it looking that bad when it came out. Like, I don't think anybody, I think we were all aware of it. We were all like, you know, well, this is too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I do remember, you know, I remember when the movie came out and I remember the criticisms of the movie when it came out. These were pretty polarizing even when they came out, you know. It wasn't until the third film that the Star Wars faithful came around on the prequel trilogy. And even that felt conciliatory. Like they just didn't want to be against it anymore.
Yeah.
So they inflated the greatness of Empire, of episode three. Normally citing, I guess, usually the evil that Anakin does, but I'm like, yeah, but they undercut it by having him do the whole thing for like love, which kind of runs contrary to like what of course, the main problem with the prequel trilogy in general is it all runs contrary to the original trilogy. Everything that we're told in A New Hope is more or less eliminated in the prequel trilogy. We're like, that's not really how it went down. Which is, and I talked about this with Ryan Luis Rodriguez when I did One Track Mind about New Hope, was, you know, if you listen to George Lucas throughout history, he's contradicted himself so many times, but he claims that, you know, the real reason for all of that was because he planned it that way originally, which I don't believe you. I probably talked about this when we did Phantom Menace too.
Yeah, there's no reason to believe him. No, because he's
talking.
Went back and forth. Yeah, he went back and forth so many times on how many, you know, even how many movies he had in mind. You know, went from, you know, 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 and back again.
And then Timothy Zahn wrote his thing, and then George Lucas said, like, oh yeah, that's canon, yeah, whatever, count as money. You know, I always imagine George Lucas as the way Gus Van Sant is portrayed in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Like, you know, they're like, you know, just counting his money. They're like, Gus, we get an action, please. Like, Jesus, Ben, I said I'm busy. Like, you know, I'm counting money. I just that's the way I see George Lucas, is that he's just like, as he's counting his money, he's just saying, yeah, whatever. whatever right. you want to believe is true. I don't care. But yeah, I mean, it's, I guess back to my point about the digital effects thing, what's your opinion? I mean, try to put yourself in on the other end of that question for me. And why do you think, the digital effects in the prequel trilogy seem to get a pass, in that argument? Like, why does it, you know, when we talk about, you know, so many film buffs are like tend to be so against digital effects work.
Right.
And yet like George Lucas gets a pass. Like, why do you think that is? What is it about this film that does that?
I think if it's for people like our age who, you know, grew up with the original trilogy and have, you know, this one, came out when we were adults. And, I think some of the, is people trying to convince themselves that they liked it and that it's good. I mean, I had that problem at first when I saw The Phantom Menace. Like, I'm like, you know, tried to convince myself that, oh, that was a pretty good movie. And, you know, so it's, I liked it. And it was like, you know, try to rewatch it and you just run into a brick wall that is, you know, the pod race.
Yeah.
lose your will to live. But I think, you know, I think some of that is people, you know, trying to cope with this thing not being what they expected or, you know, what they thought they were owed. And then, you know, I think some people just like it because it's, you know, it's different. It's stuff you haven't seen before.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
It didn't look terrible at the time. It looked okay at the time. I didn't think it looked great at the time. But it looked okay. And when everything, the one thing I will say about this is everything matches. It doesn't feel like half of the movie is live action and half of the movie is a cartoon. It feels like it's all cartoon, even with the live factors in there.
You know, right.
It blends well together, I think, for the most part. It just falls on the wrong side of realistic for me.
Yeah, I was going to say I feel like there is a lot of uncanny valley happening in Attack of the Clones.
Right.
You know, that things don't look right.
Right.
You know, even this is
watching it like it's a cartoon.
Sure.
It's not as difficult to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
Like I said, I do think that they do blend well together. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Not my bag, baby. You know.
Right. So do you think that? So I mean, are you making the argument that the performances and live action elements are deliberately meant to fit that cartoonish feel? Do you think George Lucas saw a cartoon in his head when he made this thing, or?
Again, I don't know.
Assuming that's not really, I mean, that's not even a criticism, I'm at, you know, but right, just like, right. Is it? Yeah.
I guess so. You know, because you don't go into it wanting to make, you know, and let's be honest, there's a lot of model work and a lot of set design and stuff like that. There's actual physical sets and a lot of scenes and stuff like that. It's just, there are certain sequences that are all CGI and, you know, that wasn't really something we've seen before. But I think what he was going for was, you know, he just saw a new toolbox and wanted to play with it. You know, it's
yeah.
He's always a guy who's about the tech more than the storytelling, I think. And
I think he became that at any rate.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. That's what's weird. Part of what's weird about it is that I feel like disconnect about it is that if you go back and watch the original trilogy and you see, I think even with A New Hope, which is the only one he directed.
Right.
Of the original trilogy, he seemed to have a real genuine passion for more, you know, for the feel of the whole film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I feel like there's so much more craft and care in A New right. Hope than any of the prequel yeah. trilogies.
I'll give you that for sure.
And that it seems like, and even the other two of the original trilogy, like had mm-hmm. a real genuine sense of like kind of movie magic that, you know, there's a reason why it became as iconic as it did. Mm-hmm. And why it reached so many people And part of that is that magic that occurs when you are telling a story that is so, that is actually rather outlandish, but what you're able to do is keep it tied to, you know, it's keep it grounded. And then you've got a, now you've got the prequel trilogy that seems like he's more preoccupied with the tech.
Right.
And they don't get that feeling from the original trilogy that he was that into the tech.
We like, also had, you know, other voices involved in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
This one, it feels like it's all George Lucas all the time.
Oh, no, yeah, it almost certainly was. Yeah.
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 You know, he had co-writers and stuff like that, but he had, you know, people who helped him produce it and helped, you know, helped run the thing. But, you know, I think in this case, you know, he really didn't have other voices helping him along and, you know, saying, you know, okay, maybe that's just a step too far. You know, maybe dial it back a little bit.
Yeah. Tour status is a curse more often than it's a blessing, I think.
Yeah.
And, and yeah, I think that George Lucas is one of those guys that, I think he did need somebody to tell him no.
Right.
You know, or at least, you know, can we tighten that up?
I mean, the story was that it was saved and edited, you know, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
That the money was a mouth and kind of made it something good out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say that's, you know, I think I made this comment with Phantom Menace as well, which was, you know, the idea that George Lucas, I would say the reason why I respect George Lucas is he might be the greatest producer of all time. Right. Like, you know, the work he's done with Steven Spielberg is like some of the greatest stuff you'll ever see. And that's because George Lucas, hell of a producer. He can get that film made the way it needs to be made. You know, he's got that kind of power. He's got that kind of influence. And he certainly has the mind to help help along a filmmaker make the best of their vision.
Right.
But ultimately, I just don't think George Lucas is that much of a filmmaker. And and I think we see that with the prequel trilogy more than we do with any other thing, because they are so poorly managed. And I've made that comment before, too, that directors are a manager. It's one of the aspects. You have to be able to kind of know when to delegate and how to give direction to those you delegate. That, you know, something that Spielberg was able to do in a way that I think Lucas is too preoccupied with the wrong thing.
Right.
And which is what Attack of the Clones feels like to me, is I keep being like, it's almost like paying attention to the wrong aspects of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I mean, technically, I'm like, if you want to tell a story about Anakin becoming, you know, falling in love and that beginning his path to the dark side because it's him wanting something, or to examine that relationship and be like, you know, maybe he's not the greatest guy, which is obviously the number one problem of the whole damn trilogy, is Anakin Skywalker is too fucking good. He's too good a person. You know, this needed to be a story about a guy who they were like, you were going to be the chosen one, and him being like, actually, I'm selfish, I'm vain. Right. You know, the relationship with Padme needed to be, I mean, they pay lip service to it. They have the frequently memed conversation where he's like, you know, when she makes the joke of like, what you're describing a dictatorship. And he's like, hey, if it works, you know, then, you know, the clumsiest I just committed genocide conversation I've ever seen in a film happens in this one. But by the way, that scene,
that moment that I think breaks the entire trilogy,
it is the weirdest, one of the weirdest moments in maybe in cinema history, of our protagonist admitting he murdered women and children out of spite, and the emotional core of the movie, Padme, just gives him a hug like he had a bad day. You know, even the riff tracks makes the joke of like, you know, genocide makes you feel icky inside, you know. It's you know, but yeah, he's like outright saying, like, by the way, I totally murdered children today. And she's like, that's okay. I love you anyway. And I'm like, wait, what?
Surprised her character for sure.
Yeah. And it's out of character. She's like the most compassionate person in outside of Princess Leia in the entire friggin' universe of Star Wars. The expel thing is that she's a bleeding heart liberal.
Right.
Like, you know, they make that clear in Phantom Menace. They make it clear in this one. She's like, no, I'm not a corrupt politician. I became a politician to help other people. And like, you know,
right.
I'm creating social programs on Naboo and protecting, you know, women's rights and all these other things. But it's okay if my boyfriend murders people. The boyfriend I met when he was 8. She's, you know, Epstein's Island, you know, but, yeah, it's like, she's like the Woody Allen in Star Wars, you know, right. Like that baby's going to play my wife in 18 years. but, that's my Woody Allen, but, yeah, but, but yeah, I mean, there's some weird stuff. I do think that I'm going to say this in the sense of positivity too, you know, much like we talked about with Phantom Menace, where, we talked about, you know, having sympathy for Jake Lloyd and for Ahmed Best.
Yeah.
I have a similar sympathy for Hayden Christensen, who I think was doomed from the start. I think he's,
I mean, like we said, you know, with the Phantom Menace, you have all these great actors and none of them are putting in a good performance. I mean, it's
the only one committed through the entire trilogy is Ewan McGregor. He is, and he's a professional, you know, he is coming in here. And even in this movie, if there's anything good to say about the cast, it's once again, it's Ewan McGregor, as Jesus Christ. He looks way too much like Jesus in this movie. To the point that I'm kind of like, did a wardrobe person, not a makeup lady, not be like,
Noticed it,
can we maybe put some gray in his beard or something just to make him look a little less Jesus-y? But but he looks literally like Jesus, white Jesus. But no, I mean, it's so he's giving that performance. But I do think that Hayden Christensen, he's trying. But as you already mentioned, Lucas is not an actor's director. He doesn't know how to give direction to an actor. And so Hayden was going to walk into this role with very little experience as an actor, especially and never on that scale. You know, you're talking about a movie that's going to be seen by, you know, a billion people. He was doomed. I don't think there was a good way. There was any hope for him to begin with that. And I think he gets unfairly maligned, even today.
I mean, the one thing that's good that like it of being that it's today, that it's right now, is you can go and watch, the Obi-Wan, TV show and the Ahsoka TV show, and see Hayden Christensen playing that character and playing it pretty good. You know, so he got a little bit of a mulligan in that. It's never going to be as big as, you know, Attack of the Clones was. Not as many people are going to see it, but you do get a do-over a little bit, you know.
Yeah. No, and I'm glad for that. I mean, Ewan McGregor was talking about that as well when he did Obi-Wan, about how the prequel trilogy is getting a little bit of a redemption arc as a result of... both he and Hayden getting to kind of come back and get another shot at it. Even though I didn't like Obi-Wan, but
I'm at best had like a cameo as a Jedi or something in one of those. I can't remember which.
Wait, who did?
I'm at best.
Oh, okay. Well, he's credited on IMDb. He's credited as the voice of where is he? I just was looking at him a second ago. He is the voice of Jar Jar Binks, and he's also Ahmed Buck.
Okay.
I don't know who Ahmed Buck is, but Yeah, I do like that. That some of them are in bad makeup too. Where is he? There's an actor who's credited as Kit Fisto.
I think he was the Jedi that saved the baby Yoda from the temple.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, he's credited. That's in episode two. He's credited as another guy.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Ahmed Buck.
Right.
But yeah, the I don't know. Yeah. But no, I'm glad. I mean, but again, in the same sense, I wanted to kind of be like, you know, to point out that I don't think Hayden Christensen's that bad here.
No.
He's got some pretty shitty line reads, let's be honest. But I mean, like, it's. But that's all there is.
He's given the worst lines of anybody, really, for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. He's given a very clumsy character.
Right.
That is the most important character, and yet he's really clumsily handled. But yeah, I mean, and then there's no excuse for Natalie Portman, though. I mean,
no.
Other than looking at the material and being like, yeah, I don't know, what am I bothering with? But
right.
Same thing with Samuel Jackson. You know, both are very, very competent actors who clearly just weren't, you know, weren't committed. And I don't think you can blame them considering the material, but. You know,
it is what it is.
Yeah, but I do think it's unfair to poor Hayden Christensen to take the beating that he did. What do you think of this movie brings in Christopher Lee, because everybody brings in Christopher Lee eventually.
Right.
What do you think of him in this movie? Like, it, I think it's
he's having a lot of fun.
Like, he's having a lot of fun. I was gonna say, yeah,
he's like Ian McDiarmid. Like, he's where he, like, I think he gets the assignment and he's just having fun with the role. You know, it's he's a little bit too old to do the physical aspect that I think they wanted him to do, but that's not really, you know, his fault.
No, that's just, yeah, I mean, it's still nowhere near like. In The Hobbit, where he couldn't really stand up, you know, right. Like he would almost any scene in which Saruman is standing was a stand-in in The Hobbit, but because he was like a million years old,
and he told him where he lived because he couldn't fly a plane, this would literally kill him,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but no, I think you're right, he's having a lot of fun with this role as Count Dooku. The unfortunately named Count Dooku. But yeah, he's having a blast. And that it comes across well, I think. I mean, if there is, again, that's another positive of this film, is I think that we do have Ewan McGregor and we do have Christopher Lee. Like, you know, who is eminently watchable in anything he does. But yeah, unlike Saruman, where he is, to compare the two, I guess, but like, you know, Saruman was a character he was doing some actual character work with, you know, like he was figuring this guy out and doing his thing. Dooku was definitely more of his, like, I'm going to play a cartoon villain, you know,
right.
To your point again about it kind of being a cartoon.
Yeah.
And then you're right too. Ian McDiarmid is doing the same thing. Like, they're both like, we're cartoon characters. We're Snidely Whiplash. You know, we're going to be, you know, Senator Palpatine is the least subtle villain in the history of anything. Right. He's just like walking around being like, clearly I'm evil. And they're all like, he can't be evil. He's too clearly evil to be evil. But yeah. I love the scene in which he's like, I will give this power back. When it is no longer necessary, and it's like,
that ever happened, you know?
Yeah, I'm clearly not evil, assuredly not. I also love how marvelously stupid the Jedi are.
Oh yeah, they're
yeah.
I like how they lampshaded in this one, at least, you know, where they say, oh, you know, it's the dark side is obscuring our vision. Like, are they obscuring your intelligence too? Because
yeah,
you're not really thinking, you know.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Our stupidity, not our fault. It's all because of them. Right. Yeah, it's maybe if move around I did instead of sit on chair and look concerned, you know. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Attack of the Clones.
It's hard
Star
to
Star
it's
Wars. To,
it's hard to dig into
yeah,
this one.
Underneath
the surface.
I feel like we have more with like Phantom Menace. It's kind of
yeah. I mean, there's, you know, this was still a big culturally impactful film. Like it
yeah,
it was everywhere when it came out. Like, you know, not even like that much less than the Phantom Menace. I mean, the Phantom Menace was a you know cultural zeitgeist, and this one was just a little bit less than that, I think, which is phenomenal for a film sequel, really, to have that kind of, and to be that, you know, so quote unquote important, not important as to like, you know, historically important, you know everywhere in society it was,
yeah,
it was, sold a lot of toys, which is good for them.
You cannot deny this film's success. I mean, it made a lot of people very rich.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was also gonna, you know, thinking about how again, in the way that this, do you think maybe this is the first time? I'm trying to think if there was another, like another example of this. We've talked about many times about the state of, and of course, more than us have talked about it. You know, it's culturally, it's everywhere now, about like the cynical nature of the blockbuster and the way the blockbuster has become, you know, how much profit we can make before we even make the film. Do you think this, the prequel trilogy was the first to do that? The first ones to, do you think that trend begins here? Or do you think these films are earnest? Or
I think these films are earnest. I think, because the one thing that makes a lot of those, you know, the cynical modern blockbusters the way they are is that they're all done by committee and it's done by a machine. It's not, you know, there's nothing human in it really. And in this one, this is just like one person, you know, pushing the whole thing forward. I think that makes it a little bit different than the cynical. I mean, not that, you know, these weren't made with, you know, making money in mind, obviously.
Right.
That's the whole purpose for them to be there.
It's important to remember that every film is ostensibly made to make money.
Right.
You know, nobody makes a film with the intention of losing money. But yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, I might.
I don't know if this is a cynical film. I think it's okay. Just a misguided film or something.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't think, you know, George Lucas was like, I'm going to make all the money with this one and then, you know, buy a private island or something, like, because he already had that kind of money.
He did. Yeah.
I think he just wanted to, you know, play with these new toys and, you know, and make some money off of it at the same time. But I don't know if it's one of those cynical modern blockbusters. No. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I can see both ends of it where I'm kind of looking at it going, well, I might argue that if these were earnestly meant and they really were like George Lucas being like, I care about Star Wars and I want to make more Star Wars because this is something I care about versus the modern IP based marketing juggernaut, that even if they are earnestly meant, and not, I think they certainly showed the way to becoming that, where they were like, okay, we can, you know, it really doesn't matter if these movies have any heart or soul. They can just be style over substance, and we really can, you know, save money by having people walk in front of a green screen and deliver lines that, I mean, I that even if he didn't intend it to be, I do feel like maybe this is the starter pistol for the mega.
I can see this being.
Is it almost like,
like the founder of the formula or whatever.
The big problem with your tablet is that if we start to talk over each other, your mic cuts out.
Right.
And it's really weird. Does mine do that on your end?
No.
Okay. Cause yeah, it's really weird. Cause like that, cause so now suddenly if we're talking over each other, it actually does cut you out. And then it's really weird. And I'm like, shit, I must sound like an asshole. Like I hate like cutting his mic, I do think. Yeah.
Guys, he's got a big button over there that says shut Samuel up.
It's a
big red glowy button.
Yeah,
you can see it.
No, I think it's just what Zoom does.
Mm-hmm.
I think it recognizes because I'm on a laptop or whatever, and because I'm the host, it recognizes that. So it because you're on the tablet, instead of us being kind of like in stereo, it's kind of like two different things. Yeah, right. I don't know. It's really weird, but yeah, I mean, I would think that the. Yeah, that's what the point I was making, and then you started talking, and then it cut you out. Which was that this movie probably is the one that other people saw what this movie was, and were like, we can do that too.
Right.
Not only just in the sense of like the marketing juggernaut, but also just like we can, you know, raid the tombs of a previously successful, and find out there's a market for it. I mean, I could see that this movie
is kind of the progenitor of the late sequel, isn't it? You know,
yeah, like 25 years or whatever, right?
Right.
I mean, so yeah, I mean, in some ways, I mean, yeah, I guess that would be accurate, wouldn't it? When did Return of the Jedi come out? Was it 25 years in between?
83, so
yeah. To 99 or
for 99
for perfect not for feminists,
you know, like 16 years.
Yeah. I mean, no, and I, to your point, I do remember. I mean, even when Phantom Menace came out, you know, I was 18, and the excitement for more Star Wars was certainly there. Right. It was with the new trilogy, I think, somehow. Like when they were like, we're making another Star Wars, I was even a little bit like, okay, cool. Like
I was amped for it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I went pretty early to Force Awakens. It wasn't opening night, but I think I went that like the beginning of the next week. I had been out for like 3 days or something by the time I saw it, but went early. But because I was like, yeah, cool, more Star Wars. Even though I remembered even then, I'm like, remember the prequels? You didn't have a good time with those.
And I remember when these were coming out, you know, like being excited for each one and, you know, being like, okay, you know, like after
the Phantom Menace, it'll be different. Yeah.
This time it'll be different. Yeah. This time it'll be good. And it'll write the series and it'll, you know, stop going in the wrong direction. But yeah, we see how that turned out. But yeah, I mean, that was, you know, this is also at the beginning of the modern internet culture where, you know, you could go on, you know, movie sites and read about the latest things, you know, from the movie or latest rumors, the latest, you know, photos from the films. You can go on to like Ain't It Cool News and get a bunch of bullshit from a bunch of terrible writers. But
No, that's very true. We know I know way too much about Deadpool and Wolverine. Like that is a serious problem now.
Right. But, I don't know anything about it, which is fine.
You're better off. But
yeah, that's how I like to do it. If I know I'm going to see the film, you know, I just try not to read into it too much because I want to go experience the film, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of the things I learned from the Phantom Menace and the prequel trilogy is like, you know, don't swim in those waters if you want to have a good time and, you know, be surprised by a film.
If there was anything to be surprised about with prequel trilogies, though, I mean,
well, no, I mean, but you really preclude even the chance of that if you're,
oh yeah,
every day checking the internet to see what new, you know, information has come out about it or whatever.
Yeah, I guess there was like little things like, now that you mention it, I mean, I guess I think back, I feel like I can remember knowing that Yoda fights before,
right,
going to the film, and that felt like something, you know, that should have been, you know, I think of it like
a surprise.
I think of it like the Avengers, like with how much of that movie was I didn't know anything, and so like, you know, when they're like, oh my god, it's the helicarrier, you know, you had that geek moment of, oh man, it's the helicarrier, you know,
right.
You know, that should have been a moment like that. You know, like Yoda shows up and like, when he pulls out that lightsaber, it should be a moment of the fans to be like, oh my God, we're going to see this. But everybody knew it happened before it did. Right. So there was no real big reaction to it.
Had a kind of, oh my God, reaction to it.
Like, yeah. Cause that would have been a hell of a surprise. Be like, you know, little Yoda dude is going to, you know, do some flipping. Guys, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he's going to fight Christopher Lee. Like, you know,
Christopher Lee versus the Muppet, you know, let's just see. Well, it's not a Muppet in this one.
He's not a Muppet anymore. Yeah. He doesn't become a Muppet again until Last Jedi.
Right.
And then they use a Muppet again. But I remember seeing photos of, because they had a crappy looking puppet, I guess, for Phantom Menace. And then they were like, we need to digitize him.
And that didn't help it, you know, it didn't.
No, he really didn't. But I mean, like, shoehorning Yoda into the films, I mean, we talked about it with Phantom Menace, where, like, you know, right from the word go, there was so many story mistakes being made. Right. And the sheer proliferation of Jedi was just a poor calculation. And this movie's no different, you know, where it's like there's just way too many of them. That there doesn't feel to be any excitement around any of it, because there's 14 of them. So it doesn't really have that energy. But I do appreciate, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, and with the new show that's coming out, The Acolyte, they keep talking like, oh, you know, you're going to see like these big Jedi battles with all these Jedi. It's like, did you not learn anything from the prequels?
Yeah, I mean, maybe in the hands of a more careful filmmaker it could work. Right. But I mean, yeah, I mean, much like Marvel and the MCU and stuff, I'm kind of over it. Right. And I'm not like, so like, yeah, we're going to make more Star Wars. I'm like, I don't know if I really feel like it. Like, I think when I hit that point, because I guess we might as well talk about it a little bit, because you were a fan of the Clone Wars animated show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to watch that. I couldn't get into it. And I tried.
The first season is a little rough. I'll give that to that.
And, yeah. But I did like the first three. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore. But
right.
Between that and Obi-Wan, I think I was like, you know, I can't do this anymore. Right. And I just don't. And then, of course, Rise of Skywalker, and it's just sort of like, I don't care anymore.
Right.
You know, at this point, and I've talked about this, you know, many times, where I think, and I'm not, again, you know, probably speaking to the, you know, preaching to the choir, not only to you, but also to our listeners, that, right, you know, the way I talked about, the cynical era of the IP-related, you know, we're just going to keep churning these things out every couple of years. Rather than spend that money to go find the next property that will become something, you know, we could, for the amount of money they're spending on The Acolyte, you know, they could go find the next George Lucas and fund their project and have something magic, again. So yeah, I mean, I can't help but see Star Wars now as nothing more than a cynical cash printing exercise.
For sure.
Yeah. And you said you liked Andor, right?
Yeah, Andor was good.
Yeah.
I liked Obi-Wan, was all right. I thought. And Ahsoka was decent. So I haven't really disliked any of the series that I've seen. Well, I didn't really care for Boba Fett. That one kind of sucked.
Yeah. Were you a Mandalorian guy?
Yeah, but I haven't seen the newest season. I kind of fell off with them because the second season had like an episode where like it was like just so obviously like a setup for Boba Fett that it like kind of like took me out of it. And then there was a couple episodes of Boba Fett where it's like, oh, this is homework for the Mandalorian, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, do we have to be like that, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it shows to know what's going on, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like that, but it is like that. Right. You know, it's another problem with the MCU as well at this point, is that everything is, you know, interconnected, that, you know, can you watch one without the other?
Right.
And it's not being done for story cohesion purposes. It's being done for, increased financial success.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this many times as well, that, you know, we live in an era of an unprecedented consumer awareness. I think that we know that's why they're making it, rather than go into that again, but, that fandom, you know, we're in not fandom, but the audience is just able to be aware of, we're being sold a product,
right?
And not a good viewing experience, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, something that will come and go, and you'll enjoy it for a second, and then you'll move on to the next product, which is a shame. And it,
right.
you know, it just is bothersome. But that's what I mean, is I keep, was there a movie like, was there anything like that before this, is what I'm trying to like remember? Like,
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, not quite like this at any rate, you know, in terms of a product, you know.
Even like, you know, with the Matrix and its sequels, you know, they were like, oh, we're going to do a trilogy, you know, and then, you know, the same people made all three.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be something that happened around the same time as the prequel trilogy. And it wasn't exactly like that. It wasn't just an IP thing.
Yeah. Well, we had Lord of the Rings by now too, right?
Yeah, Lord of the Rings we had.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, that felt earnestly designed as well. I mean, there was too much care in Lord of the Rings to be to be like this, you know.
Right.
It would become that. I mean, they're
With the Hobbit and the
and we're gonna create more of this because we want to make more money. I guess the Matrix would probably qualify as well as a earnestly meant exercise. The Wachowskis were looking to make something different.
Yeah. You know.
Which of course we'll talk about later on. We're going to get to the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the in our 99 party like it's 1999 theme. But yeah, so I mean, maybe it does begin here. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe it is all George Lucas's fault that we have a world where Disney will churn out another franchise entry within every year of, you know, whatever we've got. Even though we usually ask them not to.
Yeah.
you know.
And it's not bulletproof either. It's you know, they found out when they did, you know, the Solo movie,
yeah,
that maybe their plan of doing one of these every year wasn't viable.
Yeah, we could do more. Yeah, we could do more series on Disney Plus
right.
rather
And to
than
their
eight
credit, I
movies.
think they learned that lesson, you know, pretty quick, because they didn't, you know, push the issue. Once they saw results that they didn't like, they tried something different, you know.
Yeah, to a degree.
Right.
And then so in some ways we're in the wrong lesson, like Rise of Skywalker was the result of learning wrong lessons. You know, J.J. Abrams, yeah.
J.J. Abrams is like George Lucas. I mean, he's not a very good gifted storyteller. He's just a good producer and a good director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But you can hand him a script that's just complete nonsense, and he'll make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
As we found out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is accurate. I was gonna say, even Lost is like, you know, isn't really a J.J. Abrams show. It's you know he helped kind of rewrite the pilot script to give the show its own. It was his idea to make it a mystery rather than a survival show. But yeah, I mean, he's a good idea man.
Yeah.
He is much like George Lucas is a great producer. He's able to support much, much more astute talent. Yeah.
He's got an eye for casting too. It's, you know.
He does. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Boba Fett, because I mean, like, you know, it's Boba Fett makes his debut here, as a mean little boy,
little baby Boba Fett.
Yeah, I like it reminds me every time I watch it. I think of Patton Oswalt's stand-up comedy about it, where he's like, "Oh
you
boy,
like
we're, yeah. Oh, you like Boba Fett?" Okay, Boba, you know, oh wow, we're gonna see the history of Boba Fett. He's gonna be like a badass or something. Like, no, he's just a little boy and he's really sad.
Right.
It's Jango Fett does nothing for me.
Right.
Boba Fett.
He's pretty much the same. I mean, he's basically, they put two Boba Fetts in this because they couldn't have an adult Boba Fett, I guess, for some reason.
Yeah, you know. But they could have. It's really
yeah.
It's only it's these things take place 20 years before the damn
right. Trilogy.
But Boba Fett. I mean, are you a Boba Fett guy? Like, I'm gonna inject some energy into this, but
right.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
I was a fan of his, you know, but then this
why?
Happened.
What? Why?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know. Because you're just a kid. Like, you see
that Boba Fett to me. Yeah.
You're a kid and you see this cool outfit and he's just a cool guy and then they don't do much with him and he dies stupidly.
He's got five lines. He's got five lines, as Deadpool says in the epic rap battle of history. He's got five lines in the trilogy and one of them is, like, you know, but I don't really get it either. I don't get it. I don't understand. And
that Boba Fett look is just so iconic. It's cool as hell.
I guess it's a helmet and a jetpack.
Right. Yeah, jetpack and a helmet. Come on.
A missile backpack? Well, I guess it'll be all right if a fucking bird attacks.
Right.
I don't get it. I have never understood Boba Fett. And I know that they were like, okay, we're gonna talk about Boba Fett in Attack of the Clones, and everybody was like, oh, Boba Fett. I'm like, what?
Right.
Boba Fett. Boba Fett's not even the coolest looking guy in the original trilogy. Darth Vader is the coolest looking guy in the original trilogy. Right. You know, so I mean, I've watched, and even in the scene in Empire when they have like the whole bounty hunter crew, I'm like, Boba Fett's the least interesting looking one. Give me the lizard guy. Like, tell me what his story is. He's cool. But you know, it's so weird to me that Boba Fett's one of those things that just caught on in a way that I just don't understand it. And that's like, we're gonna make a show of Boba Fett. I'm like, why? Why?
Right. Like, yeah,
you know, it's, he died in a space vagina, let it go.
Right.
You know, and but this fandom just totally Totally. 110% is just behind this guy, and I've never understood it. It's just that he looks cool. That's it.
Yeah, it looks cool. That's the only thing I can think of.
There's no other philosophy behind it.
No, he looks like a cool action figure. You know, it's
Attic. Yeah. So I mean, to circle back before we wrap up, I guess, because we're kind of like, clearly this movie is just one of those ones that's just not bringing anything to us, right. But you talked about the expansions and about that. What additions to the universe in this film in particular, works for you in that respect? Because it's for at least for you to point that out as your main positive. Right. What expansions that are made in Attack of the Clones, captivate you in that way to use that as your example?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we got to see a lot more of Coruscant, and that was a big deal for a Star Wars fan like me back in those days, because you heard about it all the time. You know, if you read like the novels, you know, there are a lot of stuff takes place there and a lot of talk of how that society is set up, and it's just a cool, you know, mega city world.
Nerd.
Oh, and by the way, it was Kamino was the planet of the clone planet.
So, I should have remembered that. They made jokes about it, the riff tracks of in Drive It El Camino, I will. Like,
Kamino was cool. I just, you know, thought it was nice to see a different looking world and, you know, have like, you know,
is it the only rain we ever see in Star Wars?
I think so.
I know we get snow in Rise of Skywalker, like, and I don't mean like Hoth, I mean like just a planet where it happens to be snowing. Right. Rogue One has some rain.
Oh yeah, it does.
Yeah.
But at the time.
Yeah. This was probably at least the first time we've seen rain.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
CGI rain.
Most likely. Yeah.
Although actually they probably use some real rain machines because they get Ewan McGregor all wet. So they must be at least spraying him with a hose or something while that's happening. But
right.
All right. But anyway, so both mainly it's the expansion of planets.
Both of those expansions feel like they're lived in worlds. Although Kamino looks like an Apple store.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you can buy it being, you know, this huge cloning facility and this hidden little planet.
Well, wasn't the cloning facility kind of a throwback to THX?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Because all the white, you know, all right. The, you know, the sterile. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen THX 1138 except for like bits and pieces. And it's one of those things that I should watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that?
I haven't seen it in forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been told many times that it's like, if you actually want to see George Lucas's ability as a filmmaker, you should probably watch THX 1138 and American Graffiti.
Right. American Graffiti. Fucking phenomenal.
I've never seen that one either. I should probably check it out at some point, but
it's not exactly a film that's, you know, like would seem interesting to me. Like, it's just like, you know, 1950s nostalgia and cars and stuff. It's like, but it's a really well-made film.
Yeah. I think Kevin Murphy referred to it as a charming little film without a single obnoxious space creature in it. I think that's the opening riff on the next one, episode 3. Right. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, George Lucas made your American Graffiti, a charming little film without an obnoxious space creature in it. I was going to say, as far as expansions are concerned, I don't think they're used particularly well, but I think the Geonosians are pretty cool. There was something I think that could have been there when they're going through the factory and then the the Geno scenes are on the walls. Mm-hmm. It's all dark. And I'm kind of like, again, it's one of those moments that I'm like, this could have been rad. You know, kind of thinking about like aliens, you know, like being in the cocoon room and they're crawling on the walls and stuff. You know, there's something creepy about it that could have really worked, but it needed to be a beige cartoon instead. And there is that. And then I do kind of like the Tatooine stuff. Mm-hmm. Even though it makes me laugh because Anakin hadn't seen Shmi in like 10 years.
Right.
And then her other son is there that he grew up with her. Right?
No, and, that's not her
son. Oh, it's not her son?
That's
no, yeah.
That's the other, her husband's son.
Oh, okay. Their stepbrothers, not the biological brothers. Right. All right. But even then, maybe he had to spend some more time with her than Anakin did. That, you know, they're burying her and he's like, he's just co-opting that grieving process.
Right.
But yeah, it, I think there's something, again, it's one of those moments that I feel is kind of wasted, that the Anakin on Tatooine stuff should have been a little bit more intense, you know, like there's so many opportunities to really delve into the Anakin is losing his mind.
Right.
That, you know, could have been there. And, you know, instead he's just kind of whiny and mopey and
right. And I would have put that in the third film, not this one.
Yeah.
Because once you've gone to killing an entire tribe of people, like where do you go from there? You know, it's
hard to,
he went straight from that to killing younglings and, you know, the new boy and stuff like that. Like, you know.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. Maybe that would have been a smarter idea. Would have been, that was the first inciting incident. That's the flashpoint.
Yeah.
That turns him into Darth Vader. Yeah.
Because instead he goes from doing that back to being, you know, his normal self. And
he's a hero. Yeah.
He's a hero during the Clone Wars. And, you know, it's right.
Yeah. And Padme still accepts him.
Right.
You know. You know, honestly, I think if you could again rearrange all of this, I mean, if you wanted to keep everything in these films, but you can actually still salvage it by rearranging it. But yeah, I mean, if you had Padme's death and the hiding of the twins and then the murder of the sand people,
right?
You know, that, you know, would lead him up to fighting Obi-Wan. That would make sense. Yeah. But yeah, instead, like, Padme still loves him, even though he murdered kids, you know.
She, you know, apparently took his secret to her grave. I mean,
yeah. Which is also weird because, like, Yoda seems to know what happened, but doesn't say anything about it. You know, it's really weird. It's a weird thing to throw in the middle of this movie and then move on from. More than anything else, I think in this film, that's the thing that really does.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's the point where you break any chance of this trilogy being good. It's right there.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess Padme just doesn't see the sand people as people. I guess.
Yeah. She's a racist, you know.
Space rapist. Not racist. Oh, Jesus. All right. So I mean, like, you're still a big Star Wars fan.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, so these clearly didn't. How did your, so maybe this will be the last question, because this, and it's a positive one. It's a positive note to end on.
Okay.
Is, so you talked about, you know, you hated these movies when they came out, but your love of this world, this franchise, endured anyway. Right. Like, why, what about your fandom allowed you to actually survive this? Like, how did you not, or what, do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think really this trilogy, like, you know, being the way that it is and me not liking it and, you know, having to, you know, deal with that as a person. It feels, that sounds awfully, like, you know, deep for a Star Wars thing, but to having to deal with the fact that, like, I don't like this. I don't like this trilogy. This trilogy is not what I would have signed up for, and realizing it's not for me, that it's made for somebody else, made me get to the point where I stopped taking it seriously.
Okay.
And stopped, you know, identifying myself with it. Like, it's just like, now I can just appreciate it for the thing that it is, instead of, you know, being like, you know, part of my personality or whatever. Not that I've ever really put it too much as part of my personality. I wasn't one of those people who are defined by my fandom.
Right.
But still, I mean, you know, identified with the stuff. And yeah, I think these just kind of made me grow up a little bit in the way of, you know, not taking it as a personal affront if there's something I don't like. You know, it's just...
So disappointment allowed you to kind of move on in a way. Okay.
Stop caring so much about, you know, about all of it.
Yeah.
But still be able to appreciate the stuff that I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bad side to that is that, you know, I still want to watch Star Wars all the time. And every time I do a watch through the Star Wars series, I want to watch these ones to start off.
They have that weird
right.
draw where, similarly to, I think, like Batman Forever, that,
right.
you know, or even, you know, Batman and Robin or a lot of those movies, they always have that appeal of, you want to go back and rewatch them because maybe it's better than you remember. Like, you know, you there for somehow they always manage to reinstill that hope that right. something's different this time about you that mm-hmm. will make this work. And granted, sometimes that works, you know, sometimes you can go back and watch something that you didn't care about and it turns out you like it now. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been encountering that a lot with music lately, like listening to a lot of 90s like alternative rock and finding out that a lot of stuff I didn't particularly care about when mm-hmm. it was new, I like right. now. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't really care about Candlebox back in 94, but I actually kind of like them now. so sometimes that happens, but the prequel trilogy seems to be right up there in those in a movie that a lot of people rewatch a lot, mm-hmm. I think, in hopes that something's going to click, and it never does, but we keep right. doing it. I mean, I don't watch pretty much any Star Wars without riff tracks these days, mm-hmm. which works better. I mean, like, you know, at some point I do want to fire up my VCR and watch the original theatricals right. of the original trilogy. Just because it's been ages since I've seen them, and want to relive that feeling. Cause those were good. You know, before the riff tracks are only for
the special
editions, with the highly unnecessary special editions, especially like Return of the Jedi, which has some really poor decisions. But more than any other, and the one that's the touch the least is Empire. And even I don't think anything in Attack of the Clones quite is as bothersome as like Greedo shooting first.
Right.
Like it's which is a funny thing it's kind of absurd that, I mean, even I get bothered by the Greedo shot first thing.
And I
don't know why I do, because I, much like you, I came to a decision. I mean, I kind of came to it before the prequel trilogy even happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked the original trilogy and I watched them a lot, but I was never like, this is a huge deal to me. If there was any major franchise at that time that I was into that I would have really said I cared about was like Indiana Jones. I think probably I would have cared about more. But Star Wars was a big deal to a lot of friends of mine that, you know, the prequel trilogy was like really exciting to a lot of people. And I was excited too, but it was just a, you know, this will be fun. I like Star Wars, I guess. But yeah, it's weird that, I mean, someday we'll cover the New Hope, but, Star Wars, my point is that Star Wars has this weird effect on people, and that's sometimes it's a good thing. And then sometimes it's a very, very, very bad thing. Depending on how much you got going on in your life. Why do you think that? Why is it like that for you? Like, what about this particular franchise causes it to mean as much to you, or meant as much to you? Like,
just because it's a safe space. I mean, it's something, you know, I grew up with as long as I can remember. It has been part of my world. So it's something, you know, that you can always go home to it and enjoy it, sit there and watch these, you know, untouched masterpieces.
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Because they keep touching it.
They do keep touching it. Yeah.
Even now, the last time they re-released A New Hope, they rejiggered the Greedo scene again. I mean,
did they really? What did they do with it?
Yeah, they shoot at the same time, and Greedo says McClunky.
Mm. Okay. Just
keep fucking with it.
Yeah. There's no correct way to do it except Han shoots him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, but they just keep doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's something that's, you know, just always been there. So it feels like, you know, part of your family.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's something magic about it,
right?
But the prequel trilogies just seem to be missing that.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be. Well, I think they got it back a little bit with Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, ultimately, even the new stuff still has that, you know, that corporate feel to it,
right?
That the original trilogy, even though it was a corporate production, doesn't feel like it. Like, I don't know. There's something authentic to the original trilogy that nothing else quite captured. And, right, you know, and very few films have captured, at least not on that level. So, yeah, I mean, we probably should have just gone to a good one.
Right,
you know, so you got anything else on Attack of the Clones?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, it's...
I'm always disappointed that I don't love this movie.
Yeah.
I don't like this movie that much even, you know. Because I want to like Star Wars. I always want to like Star Wars. I always want to have a good time doing it. And unfortunately, I don't think it just works for me. This and The Phantom Menace both are just, you know, slogs to get through.
I don't think Revenge of the Sith is much better.
The Revenge of the Sith ain't much better. So
yeah, a lot of it's very slog. It's
right.
You know, and I think you're right. I think the core problem with all of these is that they, you know, it is the self-indulgence. It's the let the effects carry things rather than in that respect, we'll let these scenes run for agonizingly long times, and you know, we got way too much, you know, chase scenes that last 5 minutes longer than they should, and you know, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
It's one of those movies where they have to put like every idea they had into it.
Yeah,
and it's like, dude, you can cut some of these things. Like, you don't have to have the Dexter Jester thing where, you know, he goes to the diner and talks to a guy who works at a diner who knows a lot about poison darts for some reason. And it's just, what are we doing here?
Oh, no. I mean, if there's anything that would would say these films, it's a little bit more focused for sure.
Yeah.
It's way too freewheeling to really get anywhere. But yeah, it does have the one of the worst line reads I've ever seen in history, though. So there is that. You know, which we've talked about before, the don't worry, we'll always have, we have R2 with us. But yeah,
it's got a lot of those really bad line reads in it. It's got that, it's got, you know, just the whole sand speech is just,
yeah, I don't like sand. Yeah.
There's one that stuck out to me this time, this watch through, that I hadn't really, I don't want to say I haven't noticed it before, but it hasn't really stuck out to me before, was when he's like, I wish I could wish away my feelings.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote that.
Yeah. I like, I do like, you know, Obi-Wan is holding me back, and he throws that little thing. You know, it's, he could only muster the energy of like a 14-year-old boy having a tantrum in his bedroom, and he's describing genocide. He can't help but, he describes genocide with the same energy as a teenager whose parents won't let him go to prom because of his grades or something. Yeah. You know, it's like a Star Wars fan who has to watch The Last Jedi, you know. It's not fair. It's not fair. At least there's less Jar Jar.
Yeah, they learned their lesson a little bit with that.
Yep. And Jar Jar dooms the galaxy as well. So, you know, that was clearly a course correction, I think, on Lucas's part, was, oh, that character didn't work, so I'm gonna and I appreciate there's something clever to that, and rather than just like, you know, Jar Jar died on the way back to his home planet,
right,
they were like, actually we'll make him integral to the story in a bad way, is actually kind of clever. And led to the kind of bizarre fan theory that Jar Jar makes the true villain of the whole,
that he's a Sith Lord.
Yeah,
right.
But yeah, which is such a weird, very weird fan theory, but but sometimes those are the best ones, you know. The ones that are just batshit crazy. But yeah, so I mean, you still, even though this movie hurts and it's a slog to get through, you love Star Wars anyway.
Yep.
And that love will endure no matter what they do.
No matter how many times they hurt me,
Yeah. It's just so strange to think about how much this thing has expanded, how sheerly big it is. I mean, and even before Disney got a hold of it, I mean, there was the expanded universe and all that. And I just couldn't, I just wasn't going to, I think I've talked about this before too, that there was obviously a moment in which it was, I had a choice to make. I was like, I can either choose this or something else. And it was like, I'm not choosing this. Like, I'm not going to be a Star Wars person and learn the, you know, backstory of the trash can robot from New Hope. You know, it's, you know, I don't need to know Boba Fett's backstory. But no, I think I did kind of was like, you know, I can either double down on this. Same thing with Star Trek, where it was that there was a point where I could have, you know, done Star Trek.
Right.
And I ultimately was like, I got so much space up here, and it's, I'm choosing horror movies and comic books, I guess. And, you know, but I appreciate that this thing means a lot to people.
Right.
And I mean, I think it's, and to end on a positive note, I mean, I think it's great that the younger people loved this thing when it came out, and that they're having that, you know, that love rewarded by more modern content. So
I just feel so old that we're, you know, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Phantom Menace. I mean, it's just,
yeah. Well, I don't think we talked about it in the Fight Club episode, but I mean, it the fact that that movie's 25 years old.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, you know,
and all the movies we're doing this year, this year for the, for the thing is because they're 25 years old.
Yeah. And they don't feel like they were 25 years ago.
No.
Like Fight Club in particular was like, there's no way that's 25. Oh, no, it is. It really is 25 years old.
That was 97. Fight Club was 97.
No, it wasn't.
No? Am I kind of going crazy?
Well, we did it because it's a 1999 movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's stupid.
I was like, you are going crazy because that's the entire theme we're doing is 1999. Right. That's why we're choosing it. But no, it is like.
I don't know what I was thinking. Don't mind me.
No, it's all right. It's another late night recording, and but yeah, no, I mean it is odd to realize these films were as old as they are. Because they don't feel like they're that old, and they still feel very contemporary. Even though Fight Club, you know, had payphones and you know, the computers are, you know, not a household regular thing and all that other stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's the weird part. And we'll talk about that again with The Matrix, I'm sure, where the payphones play a key role, and it's like, what the? If you are under 30, you have no idea what the hell that is.
Right.
So,
except for maybe seeing them in movies like this, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that happened. I know a friend of mine. She had mentioned her roommate had an old payphone that he'd put up as home decor, essentially, and had a friend visit, and the friend brought their like 8-year-old daughter with them, and looked at that and said, "You know, Daddy, what is that?"
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "That's how we used to make phone calls." In public before cell phones. And she's like, that must have been 30, 40 years ago, you know? And it's like, no, now it feels that way. Like something with Donovan in Last Crusade, you know, like, oh God, I'm rotting. But, you know, but yeah, it's definitely strange to think that even this movie is, Attack of the Clones is 23 years old. You know, is kind of crazy that it was that long ago.
Right.
And that I was, you know, 20 years old when this thing came out. And that was so long ago.
But
I'm getting old. But if only Attack of the Clones could have had the nostalgia magic that I think the rest of this month will, next 2 months, will have. Fight Club certainly brought me back. But I, you know, I do wish Attack of the Clones did too. But I should probably wrap us up, right?
Okay. Yep.
One of the cats is making noise. I remind you, as always, thank you very much for listening. We remind you to love yourself, love your fellow horror fans, be nice to each other, try not to let the news get you down. There's a lot of, again, we're having yet another round of really terrible fucking things happen. Hopefully this show provides you with some sort of momentary joy. It certainly does for us. So, with that, I'll say thank you very much. Good night. And may the fourth be with you.